Say, I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Sure, you ready?
I'm ready, right
ready
now.
Ready right now? I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Thank you, man.
Wait, one more.
All right, yeah, take two.
Where's the iCamera thing? Right here?
I just got this.
I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
I bought a book, too, so.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
That's great. Take care.
Thank you.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 63. We're doing it again. I can't believe it. Joining me tonight is Cigar City Comedy's Law Smith. Law, how are you, my friend?
Good. Feeling good.
You look good.
Thanks, man. That intro's great. I love that intro.
I saw your shirt, and I was like, I got to play that for him.
Yeah, Bert. I hope Bert Kreischer's very, very awesome comedian and very generous. I can see him being cool enough to do that. I hope he doesn't think I'm like a super fanboy, because I run into him a lot, and sometimes
he's from this area. He grew up in Tampa, right?
Yeah, he went to Tampa Jesuit, as did I, and I've hosted for him a couple of weekends, and then I heard his documentary was coming out, or they were showing it at the Hard Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, let's go up there and check it out with me and my fiance. And he was like, hey, what's up, man? Which is cool in the sense that, like, I feel like I have to introduce myself a bunch to Bert, because he knows so many people. And when you do stand up at that headliner level,
yeah,
you're doing 44 weekends a year.
Sure.
You're meeting thousands and thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in LA, he was maybe one of two people, and he was definitely the only comic I knew, but I never did this for anybody. No one asked me, but he met me up at the Melrose Improv and, you know, really kind of showed me what stand-up was when I was an open micer, when I was 21, mm-hmm. Real green, didn't know anything. And he comes up, he's like, I'm so exhausted, I'm so tired. And then as soon as they call his name, just electric for 45 minutes and just killed it. And I was like, I'm not there. I'm not even close to any of that. Like, I was with him. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty tired too, you know? And I was like, then he crushed with amazing energy. And I'm like, I need to work to get to there.
He has a very special energy about him. You could tell he's just like a nice guy in general, just his vibes. Obviously very easygoing. He was very nice to do that. I saw him last time he was here,
yeah,
at the Improv.
Yeah.
And he started, it was a later show, and it was just, the crowd wasn't, you know, there with him, and it took some...
Sure.
Oh, it was pulling teeth, but he turned it around, man, after a few minutes. He just has this energy about him. You can't help, like, you look at him and you smile.
Yeah.
You can't help not to do that.
Yeah, and like, I ran into him at the national championship. I'm an Auburn guy. He's an FSU guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just walking around. I ran into like 12 comics I knew, which is super weird. But I ran into him, and I was like, do I even talk to him? I don't know. I don't want to, like, he's talking to a bunch of people. And I was like, hey, man, what's going on? He couldn't have been nicer. It's like, it's one of those things where you don't want to get out of your range. And this is like any field you're in. You know, if you're a commercial real estate agent, and there's a guy that's at the top of the rung that's selling buildings to people, you know, like, you don't just go up to him and go, hey, you know, I do retail sales, you know, commercial. I got the Chipotle over there on 4th.
Yeah,
you see it?
I did.
So, like, you don't want to be that guy. But at the same time, being a comic, you feel like you can kind of approach any other comic as far as you're not, like, too into their stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remain clean.
Yeah. I think, too, you know, to your point, I think it's important also to, nobody knows who you are. So you always have to tell people who you are. And there's nothing, you know, wrong with, I think, approaching somebody, especially somebody that you admire.
Sure.
I just, you know, what's the big deal kind of thing, you know, like I'm nice, I'm cool, right?
Part of me is like, you know, kind of like the Jewish, I'm not Jewish, but I tell my fiance I want to raise her kids Jewish because it's this kind of low self-esteem meets like you're only on this marble for so long.
Sure.
Kind of philosophy. So, you know, I kind of have a little bit of that sometimes, but other times you're just like, you got to sense it out. You're like, I don't know if I should go up and talk to him and say anything. And then I'm glad I did. I was like, that's cool. I ran into him. We talked for 5 minutes and, you know, we both went on our ways. But I was like, it just kind of serendipitous. We're in the same area in Pasadena. I don't live in LA anymore, you know, and we somehow ran into each other. So that's cool. And then, you know, he gave me one of the best compliments of my life, which was I moved back to Tampa from LA after being in LA for about 4 or 5 years, moved back. And I'm doing the improv and I'm up there. I think he's doing the Thursday night. And I was just going to come up to say, hey, and thanks for, you know, always being nice and all that stuff. And I didn't even think he remembered who I was. I was probably 26 and I'm 30 now. But, and he was like, dude, I didn't know you lived here. Why don't you go do some time? You could do some time right now. And I was like, really? All right. And he was like, dude, I saw your Facebook. You are living the life I want to live. And I'm like, Bert Kreischer's telling me that? Like, I was like, what? And he's like, you are surrounded by hot women all the time. I'm like, are you serious? That's awesome. It was one of the coolest things I've ever heard anybody say from his perspective. And then I went and went to the bathroom and I didn't realize they were calling my name on stage.
Oh,
and
no.
He was like, hey, get out there. Like, he came out, not the host, like a host or the feature.
Uh-huh.
He came out. I was like, oh, and then, like, ran out there and got on stage. The only time I've ever been late to the stage. But it was funny. It's one of those weird things, and it's kind of cosmic. And and now everybody's going to be like, God, this guy's like a serial killer. But, you know, his podcast started out, he didn't think he'd be good at it. And that's what I love about podcasts sometimes is you follow the host down this journey, and maybe you have a bunch of listeners that are kind of loyal to listening to you. They go throughout the years. I love listening to Mark Maron and kind of like his progression to getting a show and, you know, starting to sell on the road and how he's dealing with his ego, but he's still fixated on the things that shot him in the foot mm-hmm. with his career.
Mm-hmm.
I love Pete Holmes's where it's, you know, he's getting more and more kind of open-minded from being a super Christian. And Bert's the same way. He didn't think he'd be good at it. And it's great to see someone that's talking about how sensitive he is and worried about other people and being a father and being on the road and all that stuff and just how he's dealing with it. So I like that trajectory, you know, as you're following along with a podcast a little bit.
Do you know how Mark Maron got his start?
Air America?
He did Air America, yeah. Which nobody listened to, and it went under pretty quick. But what he would do is, when his show was done, he would sneak people in the back door at the studios. I'm assuming it's in New York, either that or LA, I'm assuming.
I think it was New York, yeah.
So he would sneak people in, and then they would just record a WTF, which didn't really have a name at the time. So then he accumulated these and put them out.
Oh, maybe
so
it was LA then, because I think it started in his garage. That's the folklore of it.
Yeah. But yeah, it was all Air America Studios at first. And then I guess him and Corolla were kind of the original guys to do the, you know, and Corolla has his radio pass. So it's second nature to him.
I used to listen to it every morning. I worked at a mutual fund company and every morning I had to do the same thing, just some process of getting cash flow for our whole division. I'd have to do this process. It took about 45 minutes of just collecting data and spitting it out in a report. Every morning I had to do it. And I'd just plug in and listen to Corolla's radio show every morning. And I was like, this guy is amazing. I listened to Loveline a little bit, but then I was like, this guy's really, really good. Like, just so good off the cuff. And then little did I know, like, he's the best. He's by far the best. But I'll tell you how much of a nerd I am. I worked for a small air purifier company in Pasadena and sent Mark Maron an air purifier, which I've heard him talk about ingest on other podcasts.
Oh, really?
So I'm listening to one. It's a small air purifier company, and there's only probably like 10 people. And I kind of had a position where I had to do a lot of everything. It was like the de facto marketing director and PR person, right? I got us in Wall Street Journal. I got us in Cigar Aficionado because it was good for cigars. And then I heard Ed Helms sneezing in Mark Maron's garage because of the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, you know, I'm a fan of this, but I know he has at least 100,000 loyal listeners. Why don't we send him product and see what comes back? And I think we had a little spike because of it. You know, I think with podcast advertising, you got to do it a bunch, but it was cool that it was brought up. You got to find the Jonathan Winters episode. And it's at the beginning, the intro of that. And then I think he brought it up on something else, someone else's live podcast, because someone texted me about it.
Hmm.
And I listened to it and I was like, well, he's chewing on me, but I think it's pretty cool. Then ran into him when he was at Oddball Fest. And I was like, hey, man, I've done this twice, by the way. I saw him at the Melrose Improv, and I saw him at Oddball. And it's, again, you're like, do I say anything? I don't want him to think I'm defense from falling down. You know, like, I don't want him to think I'm just a weird, like, hey, man, like,
yeah.
Oh, I think you're great. Like,
right.
I tried to be really casual both times. When I saw him at the Melrose Improv, like a year after I did it, I was with another comic, Robbie Slowick, and I was like, you know what? Screw it. You only live once kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Before YOLO was a thing. And went up and said, hey. And he was super nice. And he already moved on and was like, God, I hate this place. And I was like, really? And then we talked about that, how he hated the improv. And then I saw him in Ybor City in Tampa, which is kind of like our Bourbon Street area,
mm-hmm.
for Tampa Bay area. A lot of debauchery and all this stuff. And he's walking around with all these headlining comics. And we end up talking to him, and I was like, hey, I'm the dude that sent you the purifier. And he was like, oh, that's awesome. He was real cool, like totally chill, just not the angry guy you listen to for a while.
Yeah.
Did I just eat 20 minutes? Just like,
No, you're good.
To slurp on all comics.
No, I have to do this thing, though, now since this gets played broadcasting. For those of you just joining us, we're sitting down with Law Smith. He is a comedian with Cigar City Comedy. Okay, now I did it. So now we can go back to chatting now.
Yeah.
I'm getting used to this. See, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm learning everything myself. Learning by doing, on-the-job training.
Sure.
So I get notes every now and then from Joe, and that's one of the things I have to do. And it makes sense because, you know, broadcasting, if people are tuning in, They're not going to know, you know, who's on. With a podcast, you don't really have to do that because people know what they're getting.
Right. So this is going live.
This is going live via the homemade broadcast. And then when it's done, I'm going to send the audio to Joe, and he's going to play it later this week on Radio St. Pete.
So hopefully we won't lose anybody on these stories that are kind of insular to the comedy world.
No, not at all. This is what this is about. This is what I want to talk to people about what they know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're a comedian, so we know comedy. Do you need a bottle opener?
Yeah, yeah. And not that I need a beer.
No, man, that's what I bought them for.
But I just prefer a beer.
Hell yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah.
Well, I always like, I never want to be like, hey, I need a beer to do stand up or be on the radio or do a podcast. It's, you know, you don't want to have that crutch.
I don't need it, but I really feel like it helps.
Yeah, but to really expand your horizons, you need to do it for a while without.
That's a fact.
And you end up coming, you know, it's terrible at first, but you end up coming a lot better and sharper. And I'm thinking about taking a little hiatus from drinking just because, you know, casually been doing it a little too much here and there. And like, oh, it's Monday. Why am I drinking on a Monday? This is ridiculous. You know, and if you don't drink, I don't know if you have this, but if I don't drink for 2 weeks, I'm much sharper.
Absolutely. Like, I just did 1 month.
Oh, free. Okay.
And I kind of just, number one, wanted to save a few dollars.
Yeah.
So that was the big thing. And also, I wanted to feel life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, really feel it, you know? Especially because I was a little depressed.
Sure.
And I was like, let's barrel through this. Because I find that I'm very productive when I'm depressed. So I
really
yeah, oh yeah. I don't do anything if I'm happy.
Really?
Yeah, nothing.
Really? I'm way the other way.
That's interesting, I think, because I feel like you're weird.
I feel like if I'm happy, I'm in a better mood. I got a little bit more ego, and I feel like I can kind of, you get a little bit more pep in your step. I call it natural Adderall. You're like, you're on top of it. You're pumped. You're ready to go. You want to live life. If I'm depressed, I'll still work, but it'll be like, I hate what I'm doing at the current moment.
Oh, see, that's funny because I'm the complete opposite. I feel like if I'm happy and like, I'll just be silly. Like I like silly humor.
Yeah.
I'm not really like, I do stand up every now and then. I'm starting to get back into it now, but that dark stuff, you know, when I'm in those dark places, that's the kind of humor I generally like anyways, is like really, whoa, is that, I almost like rather than laughter. To make people uncomfortable is kind of my thing.
Well, you want a reaction one way or the other. Let's start there.
Yeah, a laugh is great.
The worst is nothing.
Oh, that is bad.
I was trying to explain this. I'm in a fight with my sister. The first time I've ever been mad at her. She's 40. I'm 30. And we're in a fight. I'm not going to get into it. But what I said was, I'm not going to give her... I'm not going to reply back to any of these just terrible texts she's sending me. Just a barrage of white mom texts. Just like, not even seeing your way. And if we had a conversation, I think it would be a lot more productive. But
sure.
Then, I said indifference is the worst. Indifference is, I think there's a Mad Men episode where Don Draper... elevator's closing. I forget the one guy's name that has the shotgun in his office, this kind of squirrely guy. And he's like, you know what? Everybody thinks you're a jerk, Don. And he goes, well, I don't even think about you at all. And the elevator's closed. And I'm like, that's so perfect. Because when you're doing stand-up, it's the same thing. I'd rather people boo me. I've done black rooms where they hate my guts.
Yeah.
And for those listening, there is a difference. And we can get into that in a little bit. But I've done rooms that, I've done Latin or Mexican rooms, depending on what part of the country you're in, and they don't like me at all, but I like that they're openly telling me they don't like me.
Sure.
Instead of just being quiet looking like a mime almost, you know, with no makeup on. Of course you want laughter. That's what you're going for, but just nothing, just a smiling audience is the worst.
Yeah.
You know?
The last open mic I did was, I was telling you, was at Bula Cafe, and it was, I didn't go up, I was the very last one to go up, and this was probably my fourth or fifth time since I've been back, which I haven't really taken it seriously since I was 21, so going on almost 10 years now.
Yeah, it's weird to say I'm getting serious about being funny.
Yeah.
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 It's weird. I had to realize how ironic it was when I was telling friends, I got to get serious about getting up and doing stand-up.
Yeah.
You got to get serious about telling jokes. I was like, yeah, man.
You know? I mean, I know what you mean. It's really not a joke. Like, if you choose this is what you're going to do, I mean, you got to do it. That's what I don't think people understand.
Right.
A lot of they're just kind of, and if that's a hobby of yours, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but if you really want to do, like, you have to go full force into it. Otherwise, it's not going to work out. You have to work hard.
Yeah. Right? And I consider it a big part of my, my person, I would say. Like, some people have called me hobbyist just because I can't rely on not a lot of money because it's the market's too saturated with the comedy. So you don't make a lot like you did. Like people think they're like, hey, oh, comedy's doing well for you. I'm like, oh no. I hustle. I work like more than 70 hours a week. And then I do stand up for probably another 40.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's getting paid unless it's 1982.
Right.
Like, those were the glory days. I don't think anybody's making money doing stand-up anymore unless you're, a top biller,
But
those are very few.
It's crazy, like, that people still think you make a lot of money doing stand-up. I'm like, oh, no. Everybody thinks they're a comedian now, so the market's saturated, and it's not about being good. It's about having a brand or something that's unique, part of your personality, than being super funny.
Mm-hmm.
So... there's a little vitriol in that, but yeah. What were we talking about? Where were we
I
going?
Have no idea.
Okay.
We were going with it. There was something you said about that scene in Mad Men.
Yeah.
There's a scene, I don't know if you watch Scrubs.
I love Scrubs.
There was a part where
everybody dogs Scrubs. I love Scrubs.
Oh, no, Scrubs is awesome.
It's because they have whiny white music throughout the
whole they do. Thing. Well, that's a Zach Braff thing. I actually have the Todd's autograph in my bedroom. I'll show it to you.
The Todd was a good friend of my best friend.
Really? Yeah. Robert Machito, is that his name?
Yeah, he was a stand-up comic for a long time. Yep. Yeah, he said he was cool, one of the coolest guys you ever talked to.
Yeah, but anyway, so the scene I'm talking about was Jordan, Dr. Cox's wife.
Yep.
And I think it was Zach Braff's character, JD.
Okay.
And I think he walked up to her and was like, "Why do you hate me?" And she was like, "I don't hate you. I nothing you."
Right.
And that was like, oh, when I heard like that's been one of those things. You know, when you see a scene and it just sticks with you, it'll stick with you the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
for sure.
Been one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, indifference is the worst. You know, not people not knowing you exist when you're trying so hard to exist. I mean, that essentially that's a lot of high school, right? You know?
Yeah, basically.
And high school... You know,
and you don't know any better at the time to just, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, to you, it's everything, which that's your life. So it kind of makes sense. It is everything.
Right. And so it's like, you know, if you really feed off that attention a lot of the time, like now I'm to the point where I'm just like, you know, I've had people that have been hating on my stand up or what Cigar City Comedy is trying to do. And I get the D-bagness of trying to put a business to comedy, but I've been on the romantic side of doing stand up and it's not great. It's really tough to make a dollar doing it.
Yeah.
So I put what I call my D-bag hat on and try to turn this brand into something that there's good comedy here. There's good comedy in Tampa Bay area.
Definitely.
And it's not recognized because everybody sees Florida as a Huffington Post subreddit or whatever you want to call it, a sub page, and oh, there's Florida Man Twitter and Florida's crazy and it's a bunch of, you know, no one's artistic and no one,
which couldn't be farther from the truth. Florida is a hub, you know, a lot of bands come out of Florida.
Really?
Well, I'm just going to say that
I thought we're lacking in music. I was like Skinnerd,
you know,
Less Than Jake.
You know who was going to be my example was Limp Bizkit.
Okay,
and say what you will, and say what you will about Limp Bizkit, but they were on top of the world for a couple of years.
And to lesser known, Yellow Card, which I enjoyed because
I enjoyed Yellow Card as well.
They had a violinist.
Ocean Avenue was awesome.
Sure, Tom Petty.
Yeah, there you go. And that's a legend too. Like that's a big one to have.
Tom Petty's huge. Jimmy Buffett, to a degree, he's technically from Alabama, so that's a. But basically,
he's a Floridian though. Now I think we've adopted. He's a Key West citizen, for
well,
sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, he pretty much owns Key West at this point. You know, well, it's like, what do you call Ernest Hemingway? Was he? He's not really... He was a Floridian. He had a house here. He wrote a lot of the stuff in that house. And
did he blow his head off here?
I want to say yes, but I don't know.
I think he did, too. I'm going to go with you on that one. I could look it up. I do have a computer in front of me, but it's not important.
Well, and then we didn't even get to Miami with Trick Daddy and, you know.
So Flo Rida.
Flo Rida, who it took me 4 months to realize that was Florida.
Me
in
too.
Two words.
Yes.
I felt like my dad, basically. even though I saw a Florida tattoo on his back, I was like, that's cool. I love Florida, so I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love, my favorite books are Carl Hyson books or the Dave Barry to a lesser degree, Tim Dorsey, who was at the Tampa Tribune, but they earmark all the cool stuff in Florida that I wouldn't have looked up. I would never Google, and very funny writers. Have you ever?
I've read some Dave Barry, but I don't know who the other people are.
All right, so Dave Barry's like third on that list to me.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Hyson's the best. He wrote Don't take Striptease for what it is for the movie, but Lucky You was one of my favorite books. And then Tim Dorsey still lives in Tampa, still writing. He's got a bunch of them. They're fun. They're like the best thing to read in an airport because it's kind of like really short chapters. They write similar. They're both writers for Hyacinth for the Miami Herald.
Is it nonfiction?
That's the true one. No, yes. It's fiction.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a long day. And so...
I was an English major, and I still have to think about it every time I say it.
So with Tim Dorsey, he created a character called Sergei Storms, who just loves Florida and goes around and does crazy stuff around Florida. One of these energetic Floridian guys. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
sure.
Real wiry, mm-hmm. Kind of like could wear jeans everywhere, like in July. Doesn't matter. Like, he'll work outside. He'll build your pool. But he's also, like, going to get in depth with you about how awesome, Arcadia, Florida can be, how beautiful it can be.
Just give it a chance.
Right. How Sarasota is one of the only cities in the country to have, like, a symphony, a working orchestra, a working theater, and there's a fourth one in there.
Because all the old people live there.
Sure, you get all the New York people that were artistic that retire there. Hey, the dude from AC/DC lives there.
Siesta Key, right?
Right. I think.
I think there's actually, like, three or four, like, rock stars that live on Siesta Key.
Sure. I mean, it's compared to living in L.A. and trying to retire in California or something.
They're little pieces of paradise. Siesta Key is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and you get that, like, when you're in Tampa, you don't get that cool, sometimes you don't get the wind off the Gulf. I think in Sarasota and St. Pete, you get a little bit more of that. It's a little sweltering sometimes, mm-hmm. when you're a little bit more landlocked in Tampa.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Law Smith. He is a comedian with Cigar City Comedy. So Law, how long have you been doing said comedy for?
When I really started getting serious about being funny, 8 years, when I was like, I'm going to get up at and we talked about this before off air. You want to do something, you have to do it.
Yeah.
And my thing was, I'm more of a math guy to a degree. I'm more math than most stand-ups. How about that?
Okay.
And I see it as like, and I come from a football background, and I'm like, all right, what you have to do, and all I heard was get up. Just get up every night you can. I go, okay, I will do an open mic 3 times a week at least, on average. So that means I got to do some weeks I got to do less. And I want to get 150 stages, 150 mics in a year, first year starting out, right?
Wow, that's pretty ambitious.
That's not
150 stages?
150 mics.
Okay, all right.
Open mics.
So that's like three times a week, pretty much.
3 times a week's not hard.
No,
right?
I think that's fair. Yeah,
technically less than 3 times a week, mm-hmm. But that's not difficult, and that's what makes me mad with some of the younger stand-ups coming up. They can be good, and I go, just
do it.
You can get up 4 times a week, even in Tampa, in the Tampa Bay area, where there's not a lot of open mics. There's still, you can get up almost every night if you want to.
I think especially Tampa. I mean, here we were talking about earlier, and mine's the only one.
Bay Area, let's say. In the because you're going to drive everywhere. So, like, when I was in L.A., you go to Orange County or you go to Ventura, or, you know, it's the whole area. But if you had to get up, you get up.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you can't get up as much. So make your at-bats, you know.
Count.
Make them quality. Don't just walk around and look at the back of the stage and go, what is this? You know, I do that now, but I've been doing it for so long that I like to do crowd work and make it fun.
You're good, man, because I watched the first round, and then it was not that you're like, well, you're a professional, I would say, with these guys.
I don't know.
You
know? I don't know.
I think so, because I was saying earlier, Cigar City Comedy, when I think comedy in the area, mm-hmm. that's what I think of. The Tampa Bay comedy scene is Cigar. Because there really isn't anybody else. There's individual guys that do open mics, but you guys have a solid group, and you guys, you know, work together, which is really hard to do. Like, even music bands or something, when they play. When I see bands down here, there's a lot of bands down here.
Yeah.
And they're all young kids, pretty much in their early 20s. It is amazing to me when they've been around for 2 years. I'm like, how in the hell... Like, how do you just make that work where you can meet up and practice and, you know, work a job? Or a lot of them are still in school probably too. But
the band thing's different. When you're a musician, you're used to it, right? When you're an individual stand-up, because improv people can do that too. And post-dinner conversations, a good one in the Tampa Bay area. They're really good, and they work well together.
Oh, are they? I thought it was just that's where the place was. I didn't even know they were a group.
Oh no, they're a group, and they're okay. They're really good.
I've heard, I've seen their open mics. Yeah,
yeah, and they'll do the improv festival in Tampa, in St. Pete, I think, in November. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but it's on CigarCityComedy.com, and it's one of those things where. You kind of you're envious of how well they work together, because they do work together and they're friendly and they're, you know, engaging. They're listening to you when you talk. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of stand-ups are like cats.
Oh my gosh,
they're just in their phone.
The biggest egos I've ever come across has been comedians.
Sure, and a lot of it's from you get it. You go to an open mic, they're gonna have their head up their
tuchus.
I was going to say behind, and Tuchus is a lot better, because they're so nervous about going on stage. And so that's understandable, but a lot of people don't get that. It took me probably till last month to really realize that. I'm like, why is that guy such like a autistic weirdo? Like, and oh, okay. He's thinking about his material before he's going up.
Yeah.
And he's nervous, but he doesn't want to say he's nervous.
Mm-hmm.
As far as getting good, it's reps, right? You want to be good at radio. You want to be good at stand-up. You want to be a great artist. A lot of it's not going to be good, but you learn how to fail, number one, which is what I tell everybody. And that's business, too. I have my own business, and you fail a lot, but you don't sulk about it. You go, what did I learn from this? How do I never, ever do it again, right?
Right.
And so that's the biggest lesson in being successful in anything, I think.
Well, just do it. I mean, doing it is that, because a lot of people will do it for a little while. Even when I started this podcast originally, it was me and my roommate.
Right.
And then my roommate moved out.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I guess that's the end of that. And then I was like, no, I could do this.
Right.
I would be horrified to go back and listen. Like, I've only been really doing this for a little over a year now, mm-hmm. but I would not want to go back and listen to episode 2 or 3 or 4.
Oh,
you
no.
know?
Just leave it.
Oh, it's going to be there, yeah.
Let it ride, and then someone will be like, hey, you know, 10 years from now, someone will be like, dude, I have episode 2. And you're like, oh we got to listen to it now. Like,
oh, my God.
You're so far away from it. It's like when someone was like, hey, I remember when you first did stand up, and you're talking about how big your head was and how people had to move their seats back and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's not still, I'd still use that in an opener. It's not bad. But you cringe a little bit. You're like, I remember how nervous I was trying to articulate that on stage.
Opie and Anthony did a thing where they had Norton bring in his old tape from like 93.
Oh, I heard Norton talk about that. Yeah.
And he was just mortified and they were bad. But at the time they were still, I mean, the crowd was going nuts for him, and they were bad. Like, when you hear Jim Norton now, you kind of know what to expect.
Right.
But it was all like, he just wanted to be liked so bad. It just came through so clear, and he's like mortified by it. And I think Rich Voss did it too.
Yep.
I would have loved to have heard Patrice O'Neill's early stuff.
I'm pretty sure you can find it. My thing is, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know if I have perspective until a little bit lately, and I don't even know if I still have a good amount of perspective. Like, I grew up in a great family. Like, my parents are still together. I've been born in Tampa and love Tampa. I love where I live, and we're like fourth generation in Tampa. And it's one of those things where they're like, really? There's people that have been here this long? Like, I was like, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, 100 and whatever years old this city is. And I used to think that was a bad thing. Like, oh, I don't have any strife growing up, you know. And then I was like, well, maybe we're a little Jewish, because the Jewish comics, their parents are still together, and they're funny. They're, you know, and that's 2% of the world, but 40% of the comics. So
yeah,
there's an asterisk next to that stat. Anybody listening at home, I didn't look
I've said
numbers up.
I've said way worse. You're good.
All right. Well, I didn't want someone to be like, hey, man, what's up? You know, so my thing is, you know, what was my thing? Now, I'm getting on too many tangents and then forget where we're going sometimes.
Well, you were talking about how you've been here for a long time and you grew up in a good family.
Oh, yeah. And well, you got to have perspective, right? So Jim Norton had a crazy childhood, right?
He was
addicted to drugs in high school and then was sober by the time he graduated high school, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Before he was 18. And so he's already lived in a somewhat of a terrible adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever drove him to do that too, you know, whether it's in his genes or in the environment, either way, he's got a different perspective than most of the general population, right?
Sure. But I think that you have an interesting perspective too. I think everyone has their own spin on, we're all leading this life. You know, we're all born into it the same way. And then our perceptions is where your material comes from, I think, just what you see and hear and live by. So your perspective is just as interesting as his.
Right. Well, no. His is way more... he's insanely smart to the degree where, like, he'll be telling a filthy joke and you're just in it because the 13-year-old you is loving it. And then it has a twist on it and you're like, wow, that took a turn that the crowd's not going to get until the ride home. And you're like, I'm not there yet. Same with watching Kreischer. I'm not there yet. I want to get there.
That's a good way. That's a good attitude to have because you always want to keep getting better.
I heard Dwight Schrute, Rainn Wilson talk about it in an actor's studio thing. I saw live in LA and he was like, he would watch actors. He goes, I'm not there yet. And I want to get there. I want to figure out how to do it. But I'm not there to that level yet.
That's important. I think you do got to stay humble. You know what I mean? Even if I think you have to have some sort of, okay, I can do this in your heart in order to even attempt to do these things. Because that's brave. Even doing this, what I'm doing, I think is brave. Because it's really putting myself out there. And if I'm bad, you know, that's, you know, you're going to get, well, even if I was good, you're still going to get people to trash you. So it doesn't matter.
Sure, but as long as they're making a reaction one way or the other.
Yeah,
right?
that's the best thing.
If they listen, then just click
yeah,
off.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Right, exactly.
Hey, hit me up on the comment boards, whatever
yeah,
you got to do.
Hell yeah. But it is brave, though, to even do any sort of artistic thing, to put how you feel out there is a really brave thing to do. And I think in order to do it, you have to have some belief in yourself.
Sure, but that's part of it, too. Part of being good on radio is you have to have some perspective or podcast or stand up. And I think, you know, I think you back in the day, my dad's age, you grew up a little bit older. Like I looked at my dad at 30 and his friends at 30 and they were men. They were men.
Yes, absolutely.
They were like, all of them were just like, you could just see them like probably drank whiskey straight.
Yeah.
And just shaved, no shaving cream.
Yeah.
Just a blade. And I projected all that for sure from a picture, but they were men, and I feel like our generation, we're still kind of delaying a lot of that as much as possible, and you know it might take a little bit longer to get perspective.
That's true. And if you're just joining us, we are sitting down with Law Smith. He is a comedian with Cigar City Comedy. My dad, for instance, had at my age now, he had a 6-year-old. Which was me.
Okay, so, right, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's crazy, right?
That is insane to me. Like, there's no way I could do that.
Well,
I mean, I probably could do it,
right.
But there's no way I'd want to do that. Let's just put it that way.
Well, my thing is you created your own choice in that situation by always pulling out. I think that's still safe for the radio.
Yes, yep, still do.
And so, yeah. And so...
Worked so far.
Right, and, you know what's messed up when girls are like, just... keep going. And you're like, no. I've been trained. I've been doing this for 12 years like this. You're not. Yeah. That's a shout out to my fiance. So we'll have beautiful interracial kids, though. It'll be awesome.
Is your wife, what is she?
My future wife.
Future wife, sorry.
Let's not jinx it, right?
Yes.
February 7th. She is half Italian, half Korean.
Oh, that's an interesting mix.
And she does stand up, so she has a good opening line because everyone's trying to figure out what she is.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, I'm half Italian, half Korean. My family owned a laundromat that could actually launder money. It's good. It's good. It gets it out of the way. I think people are trying to figure it out too much, and it breaks the tension a little bit. Not tension, but like it's the same conversation I had with her when she was starting too. Was like, don't wear anything that shows your cleavage. Don't wear anything that shows your legs. Like, don't dress up too much because women will hate you and guys will think about having sex with you.
I think they could be wearing a burqa, though, and it would still, the first thought, and that's probably just because I'm a piece of garbage, but that's my first thing whenever I see. Like, I was really disappointed at my open mic that we didn't have any chicks there.
Well,
we did have some black dudes, though, which I was pretty happy about.
Well, for almost that reason, a little bit, I'm just saying generally in the whole scheme of stand-up, part of that is because of that, right? Because it's a different, it's a primal thing. You know, if you want to break it down, like a lot of guys have to be funny to get girls. And that's how I was growing up.
Yeah.
I wasn't smooth, but, and I wasn't even the funniest guy out of my friends, but I was funny, but non-threatening. So, you know, there's funny and that guy might be crazy.
There's different. I see what you mean.
Like Johnny Manziel, the football player, he has that Southern like energy craziness. He might be funny, but he's not. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen.
He's rolling up a $100 bill,
right,
to do something with.
But you know, a lot of guys have to be funny out of trying to hook up with girls, and a lot of girls sometimes have to. I don't think they have
girls
to try
don't
as
have
much.
To do any, girls don't have to do anything.
Well,
I mean, really.
And I say this from a perspective of like, just like Bert with two sisters, I grew up in a family of females, so I lean more that way. And now I'm talking about like Sheryl Sandberg and Lean In, and women are like, huh? What's that? I'm like, that's like, you know, women need to stop hating on women and really take control of their career and life and stop blaming it on external reasons and internalizing a little bit and getting stuff done. They're like, ugh, you're boring. And you're like, what? I'm trying to like, you just can't, sometimes you can't do that. Anyway, she goes on stage. It's a different mode. And you have to look at like Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, right? Anytime someone gets up, Matt Fernandez is one of the funniest comics.
Love him.
I'm friends with him.
I saw him at open for Stanhope. He was terrific.
But
he's
going to open for Kyle Kinane at Crowbar tomorrow night in Tampa. And he deserves it because he works hard at his jokes and all that stuff. But when he walks on stage, it's that instant blink. He's very slow to get up there. I don't know if it's deliberate or not. I don't know if we've ever talked about it. But, you know, he's got a shaved head, huge beard,
mm-hmm.
big burly guy.
Yeah.
He thinks he's fat, but he's just one of those guys that are just...
He's barrel chested.
Yeah. And so...
He's like, in 1930, he would be like the most fit dude ever.
Right. He'd be the king of the town he was in.
Hell yeah.
And so he gets up there and deliberately is like, what's up? And people laugh their ass off. They love it. And they're tookus. And it's that first couple of seconds where you get up and you're like, I know people are going to try to think. If they don't know you, because most of the times you get on stage, if you're not famous, you're auditioning.
Yeah.
For a bunch of people that don't know who you are. So you got to figure out how to maneuver this. And I'll say I look like retarded Keith Urban. And that'll break it a little bit.
You kind of do.
Right. And that'll work. And that'll work. Or if I think there's a lot of old white guys, I'll say I look like Phil Mickelson if he had a drug problem. And so, like, he's a golfer, for those who don't know. But it gets it out of the way. And that's why I like that Mona does that joke, because it gets it out of the way. They're like, is she Cambodian? Is she from – what island is she from? You know, like, is she from the Maldives? I don't even know where the Maldives are, you know. And so it breaks that up, I think.
Well, on that note, it's already over. I can't believe it, but we managed to get through another one. You have to come back sometime. That was great talking to you.
I'm the best guest because I talk too much.
Remember, yeah. Oh, I love that.
Remember That's Six funny. From Blossom?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sure. Good yes just, and. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. You got a Twitter you can plug or anything?
LawSmith34 on Twitter. Cigar City Comedy as well. We got a couple of people running that, but yeah. You can befriend me on Facebook if you want. I don't care how weird you are. I'll be your friend on there. Fan Cred, if you're a sports person, I'm on there as well.
All right. So facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast. Thank you all for coming in, and I will talk to you next week. Goodbye.